John 9. John 9. Last weekend, as some of you know, I was in Seattle, which, by the way, I was at Katie and Luke's wedding. Katie was helped out here for 2 years. Amazing, beautiful woman. Luke, amazing, beautiful man. Amazing, beautiful wedding. It was, for those of you who have asked, it was just beautiful. Beautiful ceremony. I only screwed up one thing, and I said wife when I said should have said husband. But it was, other than that, it was a great weekend. And we had a Friday night wedding here as well, Jordan and Luke, which was another great wedding. And honestly, for an officiant, to have two amazing weddings that you are just gung-ho about in the same weekend is rare. So it was an awesome weekend for me, except for a few things in Seattle. Now, for those of you who don't know, I'm somewhat of a grumpy driver, you could say. I wouldn't go so far as to say I have road rage, but I tend to get a little upset at people who don't signal when they turn. Driving on the freeway, I mean, if you're in the left lane, get over. Right lane, left, except to pass. Okay, I mean, right, except to pass. And I tend to yell a little bit, and my wife yells at me. It's just not my finest moments in the car. I'm really working on it, though. And if you are someone who sees me in my Jeep yelling at you, giving you signs, I mean, not that sign, of course. I am a pastor in this city. I have to be careful. But just forgive me now, okay? Forgive me. I am sorry. But I am getting better, slowly. Okay, so I'm in Seattle, and we run into these things. There were about four or five of them on the trip over and in Seattle that I cannot stand. And the thing is this. And it's always in construction. And you know what happens here, right? You know the story. This sign shows up. And the idea is to get over. But since people don't get over, there's this huge line of cars normally. And you end up, when you see the sign, you have an instant choice. You have a free lane right here, wide open. I mean, there's no one there. They're just cruising down. And then you have this lane of cars that are standing still. And the question is, do I get over or do I just cruise down? So we're in Seattle. This happened on the freeway over. It happened in Seattle. And, you know, there's a whole range of emotions that can happen when you go through this. You can be the person that gets over, and you can see the people going flying by you, and you can say, hey, you know, have a great day, love you. You can also say, I hope you get in a wreck when you reach the merger point, okay? And you can be the kind of person, there's probably some of you out here, I would ask you to raise your hands, but I won't. Some of you love to be the person, the Yahoo, that goes flying down that lane and pulls in at the last second. You get joy out of this. I have talked to friends, and it's like, oh, it's my favorite thing. I mean, I just love to, yeah, suckers! Oh, it's just not right. So there's all this range of emotions. Some of you are the people who you are so mad at those Yahoos that you stick as close to the car in front of you as possible. You're like, I will never let them in, ever. But here's the thing. Yeah, you're all clapping, but guess what? You have to let them in eventually. Or the guy in front of you does, or the guy behind you, and you're like, come on, it blows the whole plan. So this whole merger idea, this brings about fundamental problems with the universe. And it's this. When I play by the rules, things don't work out the way I want them to. That Yahoo is not playing by the rules, and everything works out for them. This is a fundamental problem, which is why the merger lane bugs us so much. Now, the merger lane's funny, but I get told this kind of thing all the time. This guy, man, you know what? I am so irritated with him. And the way he is with girls. I mean, you know, it just shouldn't work out like that. I know what he does, and it just bugs me. He gets away with it all. Just gets away with it. Or that lady, she runs that company, and if you knew the way that she runs that thing, well, I could tell you some stories, but it's successful still. That is not supposed to happen. Or, you know what bugs me? I know him. Everyone thinks he's so great. Well, I could tell you some stories, okay? He is not. He is snowing everyone. And it just drives me nuts. Why does he get away with it? Why is he cruising down the lane and not getting a wreck? He always just manages to get in and beat me. Why? Bugs me so much. Which brings about questions of why do we even do the things we do? You know, that's part of the reason it bugs us. You know, I do the good things. Shouldn't I get the good things? Or why do I do these things? And this is fundamental questions of humanity. You look at the story of Adam and Eve. Why should I not eat the fruit? That's the question asked. I mean, eat it. Why not? Job, many scholars say it's the oldest story of the Bible. And the story is a deep story about many things, but one of the things you could say it's about is, oh yeah, it's great, you follow God because you get the house and the wife and the car and the sheep and the goats. But would you still follow God if you didn't get the house and the wife and the car and the sheep and the goats? Would you still make those decisions you make? Or are we making these decisions for what reasons? I mean, it's all part of this way we look at the universe and the rules of the universe. And we've had thousands of years to ponder it, philosophize about it, bring religion into it, and we still get really irritated at the merger lane. Because it doesn't work the way it's supposed to. Which brings us to the story, John 9. Jesus and his disciples are walking and they come by a blind man. And the disciples say this, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now this is a great question for a number of reasons. One of them, it reminds me of a question my wife once asked at a restaurant. The pizza was burned. She got the bill, and she said to the server, oh, did you want to take the pizza off the bill, or do you want me to just scratch it off the receipt and not pay for it? My wife, man, it's like, whoa, yeah, bring it. And the server's, oh, I'll just take it off, I guess. This question is similar. There's no question of sin and blindness being associated with one another. The disciples aren't saying, hey, Jesus, was there some sin here? Jesus, who sinned? I mean, obviously, there's a reason this man is blind. This is the way the universe functions, right? So was it his parents or him? Which is, I mean, him in the womb? I don't know how he would have sinned and been born blind, but nevertheless, the question is asked. Okay, Jesus, obviously someone sinned here. Who is it? Jesus gives an answer. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now, at first glance, I love this answer. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. Sin, okay, guys, really? You gave me two choices. Wrong again. Sin is not the problem here. And that's a great thing to remember. In fact, I was just reading, this is crazy, the word stroke, right? We all know what a stroke is. Horrific. The word comes from strike down with violence, which comes from a god who would strike down people, giving them a stroke. That was the reason there was a stroke, because God would be punishing you. So we get this, and it's beautiful. Okay, thank you. This doesn't have to do, this wasn't born blind because of sin. First glance, I love it. Second glance, I don't love it. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him? Wait, so God didn't make him blind because he was mad at him. God made him blind so that God could show how great God was later. I think I'd rather God strike him down for doing something wrong, honestly. I don't like that. I don't like that God. And that God doesn't seem to match Jesus, which whenever I look at God and something doesn't match Jesus, I usually side with Jesus. And I say, okay, Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen God, so what's going on here? So I start to do research because I don't like this. And then as I started to do a little more research, I started to find something pretty cool. Now, I am not trying to be scholarly or the Greek guy, because I'm really not either of those things, but bear with me because this is really important. Greek word in this passage, ina. When the Greek word is associated with a verb, it can mean two things: an explanation or a command. A purpose or a command. Okay, so it can mean two things. Mark 5:12 is an example of this. The demons implored him, saying, send us into the swine so that. So send us so that we may enter them. That's how the New American Standard translates it. NIV, send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them. There's no so that we can. It's just allow us to go into them. ESV, send us to the pigs. Let us enter them. So what you'll notice here is a slight differentiation. One is a command. One is send us so that this might happen. The other one is just send us and do it again. Command. Okay, so translators often have to look at the context, sometimes gasp, bring their own theology into it, and say, what does this mean? Is this a purpose or is this a command? Example in our language happened to me yesterday by chance. We have a little cat named Ginger. Ginger is awesome, except she's been cheating on us recently, and she just goes to other people's houses. I don't know, she's a weird cat. Makes me think all cats are probably weird, but this one is, she's just bugging me. And we were so in love with her. She had babies last spring. I talked about it. It was beautiful. So she just shows up from time to time, and we've gone to the neighbor who's taking her and feeding her and all this drama. Okay, anyway. Ginger shows up again in our entryway. And my daughter, I see Ginger there. I go upstairs. I come back down. Ginger's still there. And my daughter says this: no one let Ginger out. And I said, oh, well, I thought we did. I just gave her some food. No one let Ginger out. Oh, like don't let her out. Right. Right there in our own English language. You get it? No one let Ginger out is the reason she's here. That's the purpose. Or my daughter was saying, no, command, don't let Ginger out. In our own language, in conversation, it's both. Now you can imagine even just written, then you can imagine written in another language where we know some of the context. So what does all this mean? Well, it could mean the way we read it, or it could read this way. Next one. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but let the works of God be displayed in him. No, this is not about sin. Let the works of God be displayed in him. Command. Okay, like that. Greg Boyd says this about this verse. The verse should not be interpreted as suggesting that God's will is behind this man's blindness. The original verse does not say that he was born blind so that God's work might be revealed. The Greek simply has ina with the aorist subjunctive passive of phaneru. That is what I did not say up here. I let guys like Greg Boyd say it. To manifest, and can readily be translated as, but let the works of God be manifested. Okay, so just went through all that. Some of you are having some opinions right now. I'll run through them very quickly. One of you might be saying, you just went through a lot of work to get rid of something you don't like. And we do this a lot, right? I mean, is this really what the Bible is? We just have if we search long enough and hard enough, we'll get rid of things we don't like? Yes. I would actually encourage you to do it. Because too many of you just read it and say, I don't like that. That, if that means that I don't like that, and therefore I don't really even like this God or Christianity, and forget it all. And I would say, man, if you looked for 10 minutes, you might have found that you could like it. Sometimes it's worth it. Now, I say that, and some of you are saying, oh, okay, this is why I can't trust the Bible. I mean, this is why. I hear this stuff all the time. You go into the Greek and you start to find some aorists, preterists, subjunctives. I mean, is this what we all have to do? Is this what it is? This is why I just say forget it. And I say, no, don't forget it. But we've talked about, don't worship it. The Bible's been called a menu. I love that illustration. The Bible is a menu for what you order. We sometimes just look at the menu and go, oh my gosh, this menu is amazing. I love the menu. Look how it describes the cheeseburger. That would taste so good if I were to order it. But I'm not, because I'm reading the menu. The Bible has some big themes. Stick with those. And again, sometimes, yeah, I don't know. The Bible's a mess. It's complicated. There's translations and opinions, and a lot of you don't like me even saying that, but you got guys disagreeing on a pretty fundamental way to translate this verse, even the one we're looking at. So I say trust the themes in the Bible and have fun with it and say, I'm going to find the answer to this one. Okay, some of you are saying, let's move on. Boom, let's do it. Okay, so Jesus goes on. Next verse. I was going to give you some time to give feedback, but no. Talk to me after church, or talk to your teachers. Okay, Jesus says, as long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Okay, now this verse, few things stood out to me. One is we. Who is the we? The disciples of Jesus. Are we disciples of Jesus? Yes. So this is to us. We must do what? The work. I love the word work. Because work implies something that doesn't just come naturally. Thus, work. I think Big Daddy Kane said, a job ain't nothing but work. Very wise. A job is work, and that's why we don't generally like jobs or parts of jobs. Like, this is so hard. Yeah, it's called work. That's why when you're weeding, I don't like to weed, Dad. Right, that's called work. Because there's a resistance to work. When you're working, there's some other resistance that's making you fight against that and not want to do that. And in the same case here, we must do the works of God. It's work. There is resistance to it. And then Jesus talks about this light, day, night, and it gets a little complicated, honestly, because it's day now, but then it'll be night, and you can't work, but I'm the light of the world, which the light actually shines best in the darkness, I feel like, but in the day, we're going to work, and while Jesus here is the light of the world, and then we're also called the lights of the world, and you kind of look at this and go, night is coming when no one can work, when will we not be able to work, can we work now, while I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world, what about when Jesus said, you'll do greater things than me, so you'll be lights. I mean, like, what is this? And you read a bunch of commentaries, and it's, oh, you'll die someday, or Jesus is leaving. And here's what I think. Someday, you may not be able to do anything. You can today. What are you supposed to do? The works of God, be the light of the world. Okay? I'll just go with that one. So, what is the light of the world? Jesus has been building up to this, the works of God. I mean, we're getting to the high point here. We must do these things. What are these things that Jesus is about to do? After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. Go, he told him, wash in the pool of Siloam. This word means sent. Listen, the more you look at Jesus, you have to love this guy. I mean, imagine the scene, walking by. Jesus, who sinned here? Oh, no, no one sinned. We got to do the works of God. The works of, what is this? And I mean, the drama and the theater, people are just going, what? I mean, Jesus could have just said, hey, be healed. Or just nothing. It had any hands in his pockets, like, watch this, boom. Guy sees, right? I mean, no, Jesus is like, we must do this. And everyone's just going, what? Okay. So there's got to be symbolism here, right? I mean, there's just got to be. Why the mud? Like, what is this all about? And wiping it on his eyes? The mud, I mean, I love that. The dirtiness, the grittiness, the crud of life. It's dirty. It's messy. People are messy. Sin is messy. Restoring people is messy. And it's almost as though Jesus is saying, yeah, I could have my hands in my pocket, but trust me, this is messy stuff. And in case you aren't sure, I'm going to make some mess with my own saliva. It's muddy. And we say this a lot. You know, that's a messy situation. I don't want. That's gritty. That's dirty. That whole thing going on there. I just don't want to get into that and bring some. Sometimes it is. And then I love Jesus says, go to the pool of Siloam. The pool of Siloam, we talked about Festival of Tabernacles. It was the pool out of which the priests would take water every day and pour it on the rock for this seven-day festival. So in a sense, this is kind of the holy water, if you will. This water meant something. So you can view this two ways. Jesus saying, hey, I just put mud on your eyes. Now go and take some of this water and wash it away. This pure holy water. And we could see that, and it's beautiful. But it could also mean Jesus is saying, hey, I just put some mud on your eyes. Now go dip your head in the clean, holy water. And you could see this mud going. Oh, I kind of like that one. And we'll see later, the Pharisees, of course, do not like any of this. But this Jesus, yeah, go get the mud. It's gritty, it's dirty, it's messy. And use this water, and I'm going to go with, and dirty it up. It's not always that clean. Oh, Jesus, so cool. Now, the man is also pretty cool because the man, well, for one, the man does this. The man went and washed, and he came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. I mean, this, we'll get into this next week, but really, is this the stuff we do? I think that's, no, it just looks like him. Did he have a twin? I'm not sure. Okay. But he himself insisted, no, I am the man. You can see him like, no, guys, it's me. I am the man. Well, I think it's your brother. I don't have a brother. How then were your eyes opened? They asked. He replied, the man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. Oh, okay. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see. I mean, oh, it's beautiful. This guy, he's so just innocent, and I just love it. All these, wow, how could this, and how did this happen? This guy Jesus made some mud, put it on my eyes, I went and washed. I can see. This is phenomenal. So it's a beautiful story. I want to come back to the merger lanes. These lanes. Why is he blind? Why did that happen to that person? Why did this not happen to this person? Why is this person getting away with it? These questions. It's not supposed to work like this. I was in L.A. in June, and all of you know L.A. has nasty traffic. Went out to dinner with some friends who've lived there for, I don't know how long, 6 years now, 5 years. And we were talking about the traffic, and my friend said this. Yeah, you know, the traffic is bad here, but there's one thing you'll notice. Everyone is a lot nicer here in the traffic. I mean, in the merger lanes, they generally let you in. They're just more like, oh, yeah, it's, you know. And I thought about that, and I thought, now, why would that be the case? And I thought, well, here's the deal. It's the case because tomorrow you're probably going to be the Yahoo going down in the left lane and want somebody to let you in. Because there's traffic every day, all day in L.A. In Spokane, where there's one merger every 6 months, I tend to say, no way, buddy. I'm on this guy's bumper. You're not getting in. You're going behind me at least. I win. Because tomorrow, I probably won't have to be that guy. And you start to get this idea of, yeah, it's a little more easy to just be graceful to people when it'll probably be you the next day. This interesting thing about ants I was reading. This is somewhat of a tangent, but not really. Ants never have traffic jams. Have you noticed this? Ants crisscross, they go this way and this way, they go this way. There's never a jam where you'll see ants backed up. You're laughing, it's true though. scientists, because this is what scientists do, have actually studied why this would be the case. Because we could learn from the ants for our own traffic patterns. What they have learned from the ants is that the ants are not individualistic. They just care more about the flow of everything. Humans, on the other hand, are very individualistic, as illustrated by myself when I get really mad at everyone and don't let them in. I'm not worried about the flow, I'm worried about beating him. This is the way the world works. Now, there was one more merger I didn't tell you about in Seattle. Going to IKEA, of course, as I said. Every time we go to Seattle, I go to IKEA. So we're on 405, coming up on the exit, and there's this line of cars. And I mean, they are backed up. It's 20, 40, 60, and I'm just cruising down. And I'm saying to my wife, what are all these cars doing? Just see the exit sign up here. Like, what a bunch of idiots. Exit. Man, well, should I just keep, I guess I'll just stay in this lane? Boom, literally like four cars before the exit. I mean, I just cut right in front of someone. And I'm literally cheering in the car. I'm like, yeah! How did you see? We just saved like an hour. This is amazing. We can spend an hour more in IKEA now. I did not say that. But it was so funny. As I'm thinking of all these mergers in Seattle on my trip, I'd completely forgotten about that one. Because in that one, I got away with it. Oh, I was the Yahoo. I was the guy that the next day I was then getting really mad at. And that one had managed to skip my mind. So interesting. So here's how we end today. Why is he blind? Why does he get away with it? Why does she get away with it? Why didn't this happen to her? If I do these things, shouldn't it protect me from this? Or shouldn't I do this thing? And again, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why things work the way they work. But I do know some things. I do know God does not go around cursing people because they mess up. That is not what I see in Jesus. That is not the God I believe in. I do know that this God gets dirty and gritty and muddy to heal and redeem and restore the world and us whenever this God can. And I do know that the more I believe in that God, the more willing I am to get dirty and muddy and gritty with people to heal, restore, redeem, do the works of that God, and be a light. And I also know this. The more I remember the number of times that God has already done it for me, the more willing I am to be dirty, to get muddy and messy with people, and to not ask, who said, why, just command, do the works of God. This is an opportunity to bring the work of God to the situation. So you can spend all the time asking, well, I sinned. Be a light. And I also know this. The people who continue to focus on the system, on why did the da-da, why this shouldn't, oh, they miss out on life so much. But that's next week, all right? It's kind of a two-parter. Let's pray. God, my prayer is this, that we just be silent for a moment and let you speak. I pray that we listen. I pray that we are moved to do the work of the loving, beautiful, gracious, forgiving God that you are. In Jesus' name, amen.